Hi, everybody. I'm Scott.
Hello, I'm Julie.
And this is a Good Story is Hard to Find podcast,
where two Catholic friends talk about the books and movies they love and the traces of the one reality that lie below the surface.
Yeah. And this is episode 334.
Mm.
So there's 334 hours of us just yapping available for everybody.
It doesn't get much better than that.
I love it.
What we have inflicted on the world. Oh, Scott, we must do much better.
Oh, that's too fun.
Oh, goodness.
Heck yeah. So today we're going to talk about a movie called The Bridge on the River Kwai. But before we get to that, you have a new book out, and I'm excited about this. It's called Stay By Me, Dear Friend, In Jesus' Presence Through the Day by Julie Davis with Carl Urban. No.
I wish, but he would not write the introduction, so I'm just back on my own again.
I love it. Well, what a cool book this is. What can you describe it for us?
Okay, well, this is a devotional, so it's got, and the way I do devotionals, I have one other one I did years ago called Seeking Jesus in Everyday Life. And that's when I was trying to figure out more who Jesus was and how I could get to know him better. And this one is me having learned a technique at this retreat of pretend Jesus is sitting in the chair next to you and you just talk to him. You just go, hey, I'm really bugged about this thing, or this thing is great. Thank you so much. And you know you're supposed to do that anyway, but it's hard to remember to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're pretending he's in the chair next to you, you're, of course, using imaginative prayer. And it was really fantastic. I loved it so much. And when I got back, in fact, the next day, it's the first time and really the only time in my life when it was time. I was like, I'll pray at lunchtime. And I saw it was time to pray. And I could not grab my stuff fast enough. I was so excited to get out in the backyard and have that conversation. I mean, it was so great.
Mm.
Beautiful. And then I got, go ahead.
No, I just said that was beautiful. Yeah.
Yeah.
It was
so amazing. And so I then thought, I was home and I went, oh my gosh. Now, anybody who loves the Jesuits, don't get upset. But I was like, it was a Jesuit retreat house. They're a little progressive sometimes. I wonder if this is just some new age thing. And I got worried about that I was going to like push the envelope too far or something. But I was reading some Bible that had a lot of saints devotional things in it too. And all these church fathers, saints, and then I found later reputable, more modern people like Francis de Sales, Ronald Knox, all these Monsignor Knox and all these people, they all talked about it.
Hmm.
They all talked about, well, you can't really see him. But in your mind's eye, just look at him for a few minutes and chat, just one-on-one. And I went, oh, if safe, excellent. Mm, and so, of course, being me, I started gathering all these quotes together to use as inspiration to remind me. And eventually, I wanted the book that had all these things in it.
Uh-huh.
So I made it.
So you
myself.
Made it. Oh, I love that.
I tried to get someone else to make it, but everybody said nobody buys books like that. And I was like, but I would buy it. I want it. So if people want a book like that, it's set up so that each spread has kind of a continuing conversation and kind of an aid of remembering that the title will kind of split between one page and the second. You can read each page separately. It doesn't matter. But the second set of quotes and my little thoughts on them are, as I said, they're kind of in conversation with the first thing or extending the thought or looking at it. Oh, here's this angle on it, too.
Yeah.
So yeah, I try to.
It's great. Yeah. It's really beautiful. So one of the first, I think the first full spread says, Stay By Me. And then you look on the right hand side, it says, Dear Friend. And you've got a quote from St. Teresa of Avila. Imagine that this Lord himself is at your side and see how lovingly and how humbly he is teaching you. And there's a whole paragraph there. And then you have some thoughts. And then there's a little prayer at the bottom. Remain with me the whole day, Lord. And then the facing page has a quote from Anthony DeMello, said Hannah. And then, but he's also saying very similar things. You know, imagine you see Jesus sitting close to you. In doing this, you are putting your imagination at the service of your faith. And then that goes on for a paragraph. And we've got some notes there of your own. And then again, remain with me the whole day, Lord, at the bottom.
Yeah.
It's pretty. Yeah. And man, this is really great.
I'm glad you like it.
Yeah, very much. This is something that, you know, I'll definitely use, and I'm probably going to go through it like daily.
Yeah, because I use it sometimes several times a day, like before each little prayer time I try to carve out for myself. Sometimes I don't, but because part of it is each section is trying to kind of guide you through the day. You know, it'll start off thinking about prayer and then another section supporting that, and then now beginning to pray, and then another section that kind of supports that, and then, you know, praying for my family and friends and that kind of thing. And so it ends up with praying in the evening, the last section of the book. And it's really, like I say, it's supporting me through the day as I do this stuff, because it reminds me of all the things that either I put in my way between me and God, or that I just need to remember, oh, he's right there, I forgot, you know?
Right, right.
Yeah.
Well, that's great. Yep. So yeah, I'm so glad it exists. So well done.
Well, thank you so much.
I really love that, yeah. And so where can people get it?
Amazon.
Okay.
It is self-published, so that was the best place I knew to do it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's great.
And it's the only book with that title, surprisingly. So good for me.
Way to
it's
go.
It's easy to find, yeah.
Yeah. Good job. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Well, good. Well, good. I'm glad we talked about that a little bit. Definitely. Okay. Yeah, I've enjoyed all your books. So thumbs up.
Well, well, thank you. And thank you for wanting to talk about it a little bit.
Of course,
bit.
Of course.
That's nice of you.
Yeah. You bet. You bet. All right. So we are talking about today a little comedy.
Oh.
Not really. The Bridge on the River Kwai. 2.5 hours of fun, directed by David Lean.
Oh my gosh, was it only 2.5 hours?
Yeah, it was. I think it's 2:40. 2:40.
Okay.
Yeah,
that's fine. I mean,
yeah,
not that I didn't like the movie,
right?
But
for sure.
Partway into the jungle trip, I was like, "Oh, do I have to see another mountain? I believe they're doing this. Can we just get them somewhere?"
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah,
For those of you who don't know David Lean, you know, so he's Lawrence of Arabia, Dr. Zhivago, which I have not seen.
No, me either.
And A Passage to India. So these are David Lean movies.
He has usually a lush visual style, I think. And he likes to tell these big stories that have a big background, like this one is jungle and everything, and World War II, and they often tend to be very long. I think maybe Lawrence of Arabia is it 4 hours long, maybe?
Yeah, I remember it's quite long.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
doesn't mean they're not good, just means you need to buckle up for we're gonna look at some scenery as well as everything else.
Yeah,
and that's okay. It's just his style.
Right. And I did feel that it drug on at a couple of places, but there were some, you know, we'll talk about the end when we get there, I guess, but I thought that was just brilliantly done.
Oh, yeah.
That, I mean, it took a long time, but I was edge of my seat that entire time. No. Yeah.
This is when you realize who you're fond of and who you care about.
Right.
Because this is the edge of the seat thing going, I know somebody dies, at least one person, but what, who, when, how? And it's because I've never seen it before, but I knew enough to know about the basic ending of the movie.
Yeah.
So, but I didn't know the details.
Okay. Well, good. So overall, did you like it?
Oh, yeah.
Okay,
I definitely liked it.
Good.
It was, it's got some interesting aspects to it that are, I think, the directorial and storytelling style are very much like Aaron Sorkin.
Hmm. That's interesting.
Likes to take a real event and then go, but I want to talk about this. And so they just look at everything through the lens of that thing.
Yeah, that's fascinating. Because, right, I did look it up, and it's based on a novel. And but the novel, but it's not meant to be nonfiction at all. the fact of prisoners working on a railway was nonfiction. I mean, so that was true.
Yeah, there was a real event where they had them build a bridge.
Right, right. But this isn't really about that. Well, like you say, it's a story told. It's like, oh, that was interesting that happened, and then Pierre Boulez, I think, wrote a novel.
Name.
Yeah. And you know, I thought it was really interesting that he wrote Planet of the Apes.
Yeah, I recognized the name.
That was a couple of, you know, at first I thought, well, you know, boy, he's got a lot of range there. But when you think about it, they're actually really related. Because it's, you know, the putting them on the Planet of the Apes is still, you've got these conflicts of culture and, you know, do you understand what I'm saying? I mean, there are some similar themes between the two. I assume that you've seen Planet of the Apes, the movie.
Yes, and read the book.
Right. Oh, did you? And I've never read the book. But yeah, the absurdity of war and conflict, you know, because, I mean, Charlton Heston was a prisoner the whole time, you know, prisoner of war. You know, but it's just similar thematically.
No, you're right. I didn't think about the contrast or comparison between the two, but yeah, you're right, because it's fighting the establishment, basically. Here's the established machine of war.
Right.
And here are these people who've all bought into it, those guerrillas. Mm-hmm. And but you have other people who are going to think differently, and what are they going to do about it?
Yeah.
It's not a parallel to Bridge Over the River Kwai, but those elements are all there. You can see what the author is kind of interested in.
Yeah, yeah. And I think, you know, Charlton Heston in the movie anyway, I mean, he was a pretty prideful guy. Believed in, you know, human superiority, right? And he was
knocked down a notch, right?
Yeah.
That's very true.
In Colonel Nicholson, you know, for him, it's really the Western culture is pretty awesome. And, you know, we have this Geneva Convention, and you should follow it, Japanese people, and all this other stuff. And I thought that was an interesting scene right there, but I guess we should describe just what it is really quick.
Yeah, briefly, because this is an older movie that I guess a lot of people might not know. So,
right,
or
1957,
maybe
I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, the year I was born.
Oh, how cool. Yeah. Very good. All right, so what this is a, it's in the middle of the jungle. There is a POW camp. And this POW camp is being run by Saito, S-A-I-T-O. I should have had this right in front of me.
That's all right. Oh, yeah, I wrote down Colonel Saito.
Yeah, Colonel Saito, right? Mm-hmm. And at the very, very beginning of the movie, a bunch of British folks, British POWs, led by Alec Guinness, who plays Colonel Nicholson, they arrive at the camp, at the POW camp. So they're all captured British soldiers. But
they're marching in unison, even though they're wearing rags,
whistling away. Yeah,
yeah, they're lining up. They're at attention. They're, you know.
Yeah,
it is a ship-shaped group.
Ship-shaped. Thanks to our colonel.
Yeah.
And there were people at the POW camp already, so there's an American that's pretty important. His name is Shears. And the first time we see him, he's burying someone that had passed away and gave a pretty cynical little speech at his grave.
Mm-hmm.
And then these British soldiers show up, and they present themselves to Colonel Saito, who tells them, basically, hey, we've got this job to do. We're going to build this bridge. And the officers have to build it too. And Alec Guinness says, well, that's against the Geneva Convention. So really what's set up in just that first time they meet is this this tense conflict between Colonel Sato, who's running the POW camp, and Alec Guinness, who is the ranking officer of the British. And so how much more should I say here in summation?
And so the struggle between them for how things are going to go takes a very unexpected twist fairly early in the movie, where you're just like, this is an interesting thing. And at the same time, then the American, who's your typical American under these circumstances, right? He's kind of insolent. He knows how things work. He's going to work the system, but he escapes with some other people. And so that puts him on a different path. They all wind up meeting again at the bridge on the River Kwai at the end.
Yes.
But it's interesting to watch him and the people he encounters kind of in parallel with what's going on back in the prisoner of war camp, I think.
Yeah.
I guess that's it.
Yeah, super interesting. That's really what we can say without spoiling anything. But it's a powerful movie. It's something that is would make you think about what the moral thing to do is in a certain situation, and try to understand someone in Colonel Nicholson who has, I don't know, lost his mind, I guess. He
can't see the forest for the trees.
Right. He's just so incredibly rules-oriented. But he's doing the wrong thing, but in the context of these rules.
But also, okay, so spoilers.
Yeah.
Here we also, go. Yeah. He's doing it essentially for good reasons.
Mm-hmm.
It's just he's not, as you say, he's not looking at the bigger context. So so the deal is, of course, that he wins the battle of wills. He will not give in on this officer's thing. You kill me in the hot box. That's kind of how it's going to go.
Right.
And he's clearly a better officer and understands what he wants to achieve better than the Japanese guy or how to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Because every time he's been out of the hot box and kind of revived a little bit, he just starts running the conversation, essentially. I mean, you know, the Japanese guy's like, well, this has to happen. He's like, oh, no, it doesn't. Well,
Yeah.
He's never going to give in.
These are both very interesting characters, right?
Right. And so
Colonel Sato is not suited for the position he's in.
No.
There's a part where he reveals that he was into art. And he really wanted to be an artist, and his dad convinced him to take engineering instead. So he is way over his head. He's not the type of person that can do the things that his position requires. And then on the other side, you've got Alec Guinness, Colonel Nicholson, who is extremely confident and very rules-oriented, like I said. And he's going to follow those rules and demand that they be followed and by Colonel Sato. And then you just have, like you said, this battle of wills between those two that lasts for the whole movie.
Right. But once the battle of wills is done and Sato has found a way out that Nicholson can agree to, and everybody knows Nicholson has won, but Sato has saved face. Sato walks in and his idea is he's trying to take care of his men. And the way you take care of your men is you keep morale strong. You give them work. You give them something that will make them feel good about themselves and do team building and all this. And he's like, so we are going to build that bridge. And you're just like, oh, whoa, no, wrong thing. And the men are like, oh, okay, the old man's got a plan, you know, because they've been making it and sabotaging it as they went.
Right.
And he's going, this is shoddy workmanship. We're also here to show the might of the British Empire.
Oh, that's
that we're
too
a
good.
Lot better than all these other people. This is no kind of workmanship. And everyone's like, I'm sure he's got a plan, right? The doctor of the camp especially, he's like,
Dr.
No.
McCoy.
Take a look at the big picture. And, the Colonel Nicholson's always going, I don't really understand you.
Yeah. Because yeah, that was really big at the end there when.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, he says it partway through too.
He does. He does. But that part at the end.
Oh yeah. The part at the end, but he's, so he is focused on those two things. He wants to leave a legacy of the British Army's know-how.
Exactly. And he is so convinced. Yeah. We are superior. Right. I love, you know, in that first moment, you know, when he's presenting the Geneva Convention. He says, I happen to have a copy of it right here.
In my pocket.
And he pulls it out, right? And there's this little exchange where he's like, oh, you read English, you know? And and Colonel Sato, I mean, he can read English. He knows English and all that. But you get the feeling, I mean, Colonel Nicholson, it wouldn't even occur to him to learn Japanese. He's like, right. I don't have that respect for you. I don't have that respect for your culture, right? You know, understanding your enemy or whatever. I have no interest in that because we are up here. And, you know, and so he is convinced, you know, he becomes convinced that, you know, what we need to do for our men and for everything is to, and personally for himself, as we revealed at the end in his little speech. Is that this is going to be the best bridge ever made. And they're going to know this. Somebody said, hey, if you use this certain kind of wood, you're going to have 600 years of, it's going to live for 600 years. And he goes, imagine that, 600 years, you know.
They'll put a little sign on it saying we built it.
Yeah. And I mean, the director was brilliant showing us that sign floating down the river.
But there's one thing, if I can just say real quick, that's interesting point that you made about him going, oh, you speak English, like, or you read English. And I'm like, he's already speaking pretty good English, you know.
Yeah.
But I hadn't thought about the point that you brought up of it would never occur to him to learn Japanese or know anything about the Japanese culture. And at the same time, you've got the other leader who William Holden gets tangled up with, who's going to lead a combat group or, you know, like a spy group to come back and blow up the bridge. And that guy, oh gosh, I can't remember his name.
His name is Warden, Major Warden.
Warden. Oh, that kind of works. All I can remember is the actor's name. So if I say Jack Hawkins, that's who it is.
That's
it. But but he was a professor of Oriental languages.
Mm.
He knows, where they're supposed to be in, like, Thailand, Siam, or wherever.
Yep, yep.
So I know it was shot in Sri Lanka, so that's all I could think of for a long time. But so they're in Thailand. So he speaks Thai. He speaks dialects that these villagers speak. He would understand Japanese.
Yeah.
He knows all this stuff. So he has to be flexible in that area. But he also is insanely inflexible about the military stuff that is his goal. Insanely.
Yeah.
So you've got these two people with really different attitudes about all this stuff, about the different cultures they're encountering and who's superior or equal or whatever. But they both are so inflexible and they both have a very narrow vision because it's like a laser focused on here's my objective, here's what I will do.
Yeah.
And it's interesting looking at those two next to each other. Or, you know, contrasting them as the movie goes along.
I feel like Colonel Nicholson's being compared really to three people. Well, four if you count the doctor. But it's really Colonel Nicholson and Sato, Colonel Nicholson and Shears, and Colonel Nicholson and Warden, you know.
Yeah, Nicholson is the thing. Nicholson is the one that's measuring, everybody's measured against.
Yeah.
Or that he's compared to all these three people, you're right, and shows here's where he's wrong or here's where he's different or look, they're the same, but what's happening that's different here in one of these places. I think the doctor is just a character that's there to kind of, in a sense, I think William Holden Shears is there in that sense too of they're the sane ones.
Yeah.
You know, however they're expressing it. One is a late faithful doctor in the military. The other one is an American who's working every freaking angle to get what he wants. He's kind of a con man.
Right, right.
But both of them are the only ones who can look with real context and fresh eyes at what these people are doing and go, madness, as you say, you know.
It's just crazy.
Yeah.
But yeah, so it's really interesting, and I think that the things that this movie has to say about human nature, I think it does really well, you know, because we see this in our daily lives too. So for example, we have Colonel Nicholson and Sato in this contest of wills, where Nicholson is like, my officers are not going to work on this bridge. I mean, they're not going to do manual labor. We're not doing this, right? Throws him in the hot box, throws his officers in another lock box, and you know, lasts for a month, doesn't it? Because at one point he says, we lost a whole month. He says, we lost a whole month, you know. But then Sato finally has to give in, because Sato needs the bridge completed by a certain date, or he's probably going to not live. He says he's going to have to commit suicide, you know. And but that whole thing was over. My officers, it's the Geneva Convention says that they're not supposed to do manual labor, and you're wanting them to do that, right? And then as they start to build the bridge, Nicholson's almost offhandedly is talking to the doctor, I think. And he says, yeah, all the officers volunteered to work on this thing. They're all out there working. We're short on men. We're not going to make it in time. Gosh. And it was just like, boom. Just and completely different answer to the exact same question.
He's doing exactly what Sato wanted to do, and he wouldn't let him. And he goes in and talks all the sick guys into coming out and doing it too.
Right.
Which was
right.
The other thing Sato said is, we're going to use the sick people. And he's like, you will not.
You will not.
You will not use my sick people.
It's like he turned into Sato.
Yeah. Well, it's he. Yeah. But he's doing it out of. I don't know. He's doing it for a different reason. It's not because he has military orders. This is his higher purpose, that he'll turn everything to it because it's okay to do it for his reason.
Yeah, right. Exactly. And the doctor is just sitting there looking at this. And I mean, the doctor shakes his head a lot in this movie. You just see him. they show him off to the side, and he's just like shaking his head. And again, it reminds me of Dr. McCoy all the time. He's just like, you know, he's the one that's saying, this is madness. But I love that, you know, they'll linger on him for a second, but he'll be kind of off, kind of on the side of the frame and just shaking his head. You know, that was after the 600 years comment. You know, he's just like, what, you know, and then he asks him, you know, hey, is it a good idea that we're doing this?
Have you thought about that?
Yeah. And he's like, yeah. And, so once he's released from the hot box and he goes to the where they're building the bridge, and he's got he's talking to a soldier, and the soldier is winking at him, like, you know.
Yeah.
You know, Colonel Nicholson says something like, you know, how many people are under your command, soldier? And he's like, I'm not quite sure, sir. Wink, wink, wink. You know, not. And he's like, you know, I'm sabotaging the heck out of this thing because that's what we should be doing, right?
Right.
And yeah, he rejects him right there. He says, I don't know what's wrong with your face, but stop doing that.
He's
just like, we're building this bridge. And, you know, the first time that we see that something's awry is when they talk about escape. And
I was just waiting to bring that up.
Yeah, and Colonel Nicholson was like, no, we're not escaping, because we were ordered to surrender. It would actually maybe be against our orders to escape. And
which is so funny. Yeah. Well, and the part I'd forgotten, because that's the thing where what that shows is the difference between Nicholson and Shears.
Yes.
Because, he's like, the whole thing of being ordered to, the idea, because you were ordered to surrender.
Yeah.
That means you can't do anything else.
Right, right.
You know, and that's it shows what a terrible officer he probably was, because he couldn't stop and think about the bigger needs of whatever situation has changed. But at one point, somebody said, Major Hughes says, Jennings has a plan, sir. He seems to think, and Colonel Nicholson says, yes, I'm sure Jennings has a plan, but escape? Where? Into this jungle? That fellow Sato was right. No need for barbed wire or fence. One chance in 100 of survival. I'm sure a man of Commander Shear's experience will attest to that. And Shear says, I'd say the odds against a successful escape are about 100 to 1. But may I add another word, Colonel? The odds against survival in this camp are even worse.
Mm.
And so you've got another point, which is, you know, you brought up the thing about surrender. But on top of that is the practical experience is being ignored.
Yeah.
Because he's taking Sato's word.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Sato says, oh, no need for barbed wire or fence. One chance in 100. Don't even try. And Shears is like, those aren't bad odds, considering mm-hmm. the circumstances.
Yeah, right.
You're not thinking straight.
Yeah, yeah. That's exactly right. And, yeah, I got to like his attitude, Shears. you got to be a Shears. Well,
it's very American.
That's right. You got to be Shears for sure.
Yeah.
But yeah, but that was a really interesting exchange, you know. So at that point, you're like, okay, well, this is different. And you know, something else that came to my mind is we talked about The Great Escape. And I think The Great Escape came out after this one, like 5 or 6 years later.
Oh, okay.
But isn't that an interesting contrast? I mean, we can't get into it too much because I haven't seen it super lately. But wasn't Steve McQueen, didn't he escape and then have to go back? Trying to remember some of the details. But
yeah,
but it was like, you know, POWs and they're wanting to escape. You know, that's their whole thing is figuring out how to get out of there. But they had
the terrible idea of everybody who's good at escape keeps trying to escape. We're going to put them in one place and watch them. And I'm like, oh my gosh, this is the dumbest thing I ever heard of.
Yeah.
They're going to all teach each other everything.
Yeah.
Well, and what I was thinking, yeah, The Great Escape is about it's our duty to escape. It doesn't matter under what circumstances you got here. Now it's our duty has changed.
Mm-hmm.
But I was thinking this movie is kind of like across, because between two movies, the one movie is looking at obsession. That's what it's looking at. Or one part of the movie, the Japanese part in the jungle with Colonel Nicholson. It's just looking at a man who is obsessed with this one idea. And we now know by the end of the movie, the idea he's really obsessed with is not British workmanship. It's not keeping the men busy anymore. It's about him. In fact, he has no legacy. He spent maybe 10 months at home out of the whole of his career. And what has his career been worth? What has he done? Well, this bridge is it. And that's one reason he's so obsessed.
Right. And that was an amazing little speech that he gave.
Yeah. He was being brutally honest about himself, really reflective with Sato. Then you have, because all the Japanese are like, I don't know why he's helping us, but thank goodness, you know, they moved the location. Oh, this is a terrible place. We're going to move it.
Right. Yeah. You can't build a bridge right here. Right.
The engineers seem to be on board too. Oh, yes, sir.
That's funny.
No, but then the other movie that it makes me think of, it's like it's crossed with The Guns of Navarone.
Ooh, Guns of Navarone.
Or something. Well, because... Mm-hmm. You've got these commando-type people coming through the jungle. They've parachuted in. They're coming through the jungle. They're fighting their way there. And their whole thing is to destroy this thing that would help the enemy. And that's the Guns of Navarone, basically.
Yeah.
They're having, you know, one guy dies, another guy, they have to leave. You're going to have to leave him behind if they don't carry him.
You're making me want to read some Alistair MacLean.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. Oh, I love Alistair MacLean.
It's been a while. Me too. Bear Island. Ice Station Zebra?
Yes. Oh, my gosh.
So good.
I wonder what the library's got. I love those books
so much. Oh.
The Guns of Navarone's one of the best.
Yes, for sure.
I didn't know you read Alistair MacLean.
I did, It was long ago, but I used to really like him a lot. I used
Another
to collect
bond
them.
Between us.
Oh, that's so good. Oh,
there's probably nothing we could talk about here, but I'm telling you, everybody, you go... We need to each pick our favorite one. We'll look at the titles and we put them in the show notes.
Oh, that's
maybe.
Fun. Mine is probably Bear Island, but Ice Station Zebra is so good.
Oh golly!
Yep,
that is good. And the movie's not bad with Rock Hudson.
Yeah, too fun.
But I don't remember Bear Island, so it must not be one.
It's kind of like a CIA-ish or the British version. You know, MI5. I don't know. It's kind of a spy thing.
Yeah.
So.
You're either spy ones.
I can see the cover even. It's a guy laying down with a rifle on a cliff.
Okay. Yeah. Okay, I'm going to look through the titles. Oh, now I've got to start rereading these. Thank you for my beach reading. I'm going to have beach reading. I'm not going to be at a beach.
I am so going to grab some of those.
Those are so good.
Oh, shoot.
Oh, my gosh. I bet they're all in the Kindle now, too.
I love it. I love it. Very good. But yeah, you know, I love that you're saying that. I love that. Yeah.
Yeah, because when Cheers is called, he's made it through, he's recuperated, he's hanging out with beautiful blonde nurses on the beach and stuff, and he's going to get transferred back, and it's going to be great. And they call him in, the British guys, and go, okay, yeah, we've got something on you, and you have to help us. And they do, and I won't go into it, but because it doesn't matter. It's just the reason he's got to go. And they're like, because you can help guide us. You're the only one who's been through there. Well, the minute they land, it's like, oh, this native says that's all being patrolled. So now we have to go another way. So it doesn't matter why Shears got picked.
Why am I so important to this outfit? Yeah.
And the one guy keeps saying, there's always the unexpected, isn't there?
Yes. Yeah.
And that's what Shears is continually running into, and that group. There's always the unexpected.
Right.
Who knew over this ridge there were going to be a bunch of Japanese soldiers? Who knew that this guy would get shot in the foot? Who knew? And they're having to kind of continually change it, but that makes that part into a real military army adventure thriller.
Right.
Just trying to get there in time.
Yeah, it changes from bridge building to that, and we seems like we hang out in there for half hour to 40 minutes.
Yeah, that's the thing where I was like, I think 15 minutes of jungle would have done it, but it's okay. Go ahead.
Yeah, and then they're continuing to build the bridge, and they're putting their British know-how to work, and they make their way through, and it was interesting too. I don't know why they would do this, but they had those Thai women carrying their stuff. That was odd.
Because I think all the men were gone.
Okay. Yeah. So that was
strange. There were they had Thai women because that's all there was to help carry everything.
Yeah. So they make their way through the jungle, and that guy's, got a bad foot, and and then that young kid, who's been trained.
He's a good swimmer.
Yeah. He's a really good swimmer. And his name was Joyce. Lieutenant Joyce.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
And it kind of ends that way, right? We see them arrive at the bridge, and there's this really long, like we mentioned, the sequence is just so long. But again, I was just riveted. Here's Shears, who had escaped with that 1 in 100 chance. He got out of there. And then he comes back, and here he is at the bridge again, and it exists. And he's like, holy cow. And they swim down the river and put charges all around it and have their plan. The reason for the timing is they've learned that a train is going to actually go over this bridge with a bunch of Japanese important folk. And they're looking to blow it up while the train is on the bridge. So there's some timing involved there. And, that can be madness too, right?
The whole time I was going, no, just blow it up.
Just blow it up right now. Just blow up the dang thing. So you're doing all this risky stuff just because of timing. That was just hard to take. And then as the thing unfolded, I thought there was just the director, I thought he was just fantastic. I mean, there were so many things in that sequence that I just thought were amazing. And to maintain tension that long, it was excruciating to watch that. And I was watching it, and I was just like, no. The first time I saw it,
Colonel Nicholson is the whole time.
Yeah, he's looking over the edge. I'm like, no way, dude. And he sees
because the water has gone down.
The water went down. Unexpectedly, the water went down, so some of their wire was exposed. And while they're watching the bridge through binoculars and things, and as Colonel Nicholson notices the wire, and then he goes to the Japanese guy, Saito, and tells him, he says, "There's something going on here, right?"
I know.
Oh, And then the British or the little commando team or whatever we call them, they were shocked to see Alec Guinness, Colonel Nicholson, lead Sato down off the bridge to go inspect what's going on here. And wow, it was just so powerful. And then the end, to me, the first time I saw it was a surprise. I went in without knowing for sure what it was about. Having Colonel Nicholson say, no, we're not blowing up this bridge, and start to fight a British commando was unbelievable. It was just unbelievable. And
but I did love when he has that, everybody loves it, that moment when he recognizes it's Shears coming after him.
Right.
And the mortar goes off, I guess.
Yeah, yeah. Oh,
that bastard. Sorry, that was Warden, but it had to be said. It was deliberate. Anyway.
It was brutal. Right.
Yeah, it was brutal, and it was stupid because it was poor timing because it was too soon. But they needed to. Anyway, it doesn't matter. Yeah. So, but he looks at him, and he just suddenly snaps out of it.
Yeah.
He's like, "What have I done?"
Yeah. Go ahead.
And he stops, and you can just almost see everything crashing together in his mind, and he's like, "What have I done?"
Yeah.
He's like, "If this guy actually came back to try to stop me." What does that mean?
Yeah.
Oh, no. What have I done?
Yep.
You know?
Yeah. So powerful.
Yeah.
So powerful. Now, Sato, this is what I think. I think he was preparing suicide, wasn't he?
Oh, yeah. He was ready for seppuku.
Okay. That's what I thought. In case so they he couldn't wrote do this it on poem time. Or whatever, this beautiful piece of paper. And he cut off his hair, and he put it in and rolled it up in the paper. I thought that's what was happening there. And was he just going to do it right on the bridge?
No, I figured – I wasn't sure. Now, I was watching going, is he doing this because they built such a better bridge than he could have ever done? Or is it because he thinks it's not going to go off – it's not going to happen in time? Because that was before the bridge was quite done, and he had said he would have to kill himself if the
bridge wasn't
done. Yeah. And when I looked on Wikipedia, because there were a couple things I had questions about, and that was one of them, and they said it was because he wouldn't have finished the bridge on time.
Interesting.
I think he was ashamed.
He was ashamed to have been bested. Yeah. And, yeah, that's what I thought. It didn't occur to me that the bridge wouldn't be done because it seemed like they were going to make it.
At the last minute, they were like, oh, we have to... When he's pulling the soldiers from the hospital and he's getting the officers to work and everything, there's like, I think we can still make the 12th. I think, probably.
Right.
You know.
Yeah.
So I don't know. But I'd say that's kind of left open for us.
Yeah, right. Maybe so. Powerful, powerful stuff. But I loved, you know, I like that you compared him to Aaron Sorkin. I thought that's interesting because there was this one scene where they were walking and talking, right? They're walking along the bridge. They get on a raft.
Right.
I mean, unnecessarily for the filmmaker, it's beautiful, but, you know, I'm sure that was hard, you know? Well, so they get on the raft and they're riding through the raft and talking about building the bridge and just a big walk and talk, right?
David Lean didn't care.
Yeah.
He's doing it, man.
He's doing it.
Well, and the thing that struck me is, so you get these movies that we think of as being historical.
Mm-hmm.
And then they use the setting and the situation. And as we were saying, they talk about something else completely that isn't necessarily true to the characters. So The Social Network, you know, they were like, some of that stuff didn't really happen.
Right.
Or those weren't the motivations. Well, it doesn't matter because he's interested in something else.
Right.
Right. And Steve Jobs is the same way. And I remember they asked Steve Wozniak, you know, who was his partner at the beginning of Apple, were there things that weren't true? And he goes, yeah, but you know what? It felt right. The whole thing felt right.
Mm-hmm.
So he still had the general tone correct. It's just he was interested in looking at something else. And this movie is the same way. And I had forgotten it was based on a fictional book. So there, that author was interested in something else, I suppose, if it was similar enough to the movie.
Yeah.
And I used to not like that. And some people don't like that. They say it should be historical because, let's face it, America watches these things, or the world watches these things, and they'll go, that's exactly what happened.
That is it. Quote that
from now on.
Right.
It doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. And other people go, no, it's interesting to do it. And I've, between talking about these with you, and of course I live with Rose Davis, who's one of the best people at looking at story and motivation, and my husband. Well, oh, everybody, what can I say? But it's, he's back to Hannah too. But anyway, but especially Rose, I'm just going to say it. Mm-hmm. I've learned to not care. I've learned to just be interested in what the story maker wants to tell me, because I've started thinking of things like the Odyssey, and you said you're going to read the Aeneid,
mm-hmm.
and the Iliad and all these things, and thought somebody had to choose what they cared about in the story and send it in that direction.
Yeah.
Interpret it.
Wow.
And so, I mean, you know, even the Bible.
Yeah,
the Bible,
I was going to say the Bible too, you know, Genesis.
Yeah. Yep. Because as mm-hmm. you, especially like the Old Testament, people will say, oh, well, the, you know, these people in Gilgamesh's time, they had that kind of story, and these had this story. And it's like, yeah, that's why the Bible was written down and told. They looked at it through the lens of, we know who really did it.
Yeah.
It was God, and it was for this purpose. Look at what that means. Look at the difference of the story. And so I was wondering, so do you have feelings on that one way or the other?
I used to feel that way too. It would frustrate me to watch a movie and then discover, that didn't really happen or anything like that. So it did used to bother me, but I can't speak to a transition. But I have stopped worrying about that. I don't know when that occurred. But it's like a good movie is a good movie, you know, Gladiator. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
You know, Spartan.
What's the Spartan movie?
Spartacus.
Spartacus.
No,
yeah.
Not the Spartan movie. 300. Yeah.
300, right? Which I called a music video, and you said, Scott, come on.
I did.
I said, this is a music video.
No, it was wonderful. Stop it.
So yeah, but that's what they're doing though. I love what you're saying. It's the story that's the thing, and you're right. It does skew people's visions of history, at least in the United States, where we don't spend a lot of time looking at that. Mm-hmm. But you know, this story has a lot to say, and it's very worthwhile. You know. This duty and honor stuff, these codes, you know, like Sato had his code and Nicholson had his code, and it was a clash of codes.
Warden.
Yeah.
Had his code.
Right.
Kind of what it does is it goes back to that idea that historical versus the other is the whole point is a story can tell the truth in the way the facts can't.
Yes.
And so these people are using the stories to look at what are these situations and what is the truth.
That's fascinating.
Here.
You know, because that's, you know, we're talking about the Odyssey. And the Odyssey was told orally forever and ever, right?
Yeah.
And, look, I mean, surely it morphed over time.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, obviously is not factual, yet it tells truth. You know what I mean? You know, the stories got better. You know, who knows how the story started, but you can just imagine that morphing over time. And I guess this is almost us seeing that process in real time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, some of these movies are just no good at all, but like this one, again, it has things to say. It exists for reasons, you know? And I imagine you could make a, one thing that probably affects it too is like when, like there was a movie about George W. Bush, right? And it's way mm-hmm. too soon for something like that. So I think when you lie in that movie, it's different to me. I mean, I said the word lie, right? It's like when you show that movie and you show something that's not true, it's like, is it just too close? Is it because the facts are so recent that I have a problem with that? Because I do have a problem with that. On the reason
you're doing it.
Yeah, it depends on why you're doing it, right? Like Oliver Stone and JFK, right?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? He had reasons for doing it, but I didn't appreciate the reasons. And because everything's so recent, I guess. But here, I mean, this movie was 1957. I don't know. This is interesting. I'm working it out as we're talking.
It's timeless movie because of those elements we're talking about. Exactly, and even in the jungle scenes, you still have William Holden, Shears, telling Warden, like, you're just as bad as Nicholson.
Yes.
You cannot bend. You are too rigid. Right. And this is, I think, when he was like, you know, leave me behind. My foot's been shot.
Yep. Yeah, he's like, not this again. Like, this is crazy.
He was like, you're both the same. You've forgotten how to live like a human being. And I think at base, it's looking at how do you remain a human being and have enough vision and caring about all the things that are really important while you're still trying to accomplish these other goals.
Right.
There are other ways that you can make the battalion hold together. There are other ways that you can, humane ways in both situations, that you can do all these things without going off on these obsessive tracks that both these other two men go on. He killed, Warden kills Shears, Nicholson, I guess those two, with the mortar fire.
Yes.
And he turns around, and you only know it because the Thai women are kind of cringing away from him. And he's like, I had to do it. They might be captured. They might tell everything. And I'm like, what do they have to tell? They're blowing the bridge up. Done. Done and done. What else is there?
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
But he's so obsessed with his secrecy, this idea.
Yeah.
He just does it.
Crazy. Yeah. And this is the madness, right? And I think that's probably the main theme of the whole thing is just madness. It's like it's just crazy. But
how do you live like a human being?
Yeah. And I think too, you know, one of the things that I pull out of it is, you know, we have these rules. You know, I recently read a book called A Woman Is No Man. It's a novel.
Okay.
And it's about a Palestinian family who moves to Brooklyn. And I remember that there was a grandmother in that book who was always worried about things that were cultural, right? She was worried, my daughters need to be married. There was intense worry about things that I would never worry about.
Mm-hmm.
And it was cultural, right? It was her culture. And I got to thinking, well, you know, wow. So she's like under a whole completely different set of rules than I am. And look at all the stress she has, right? And then I was like, well, what am I stressing about? that's about my rules, my society's rules, right?
Yeah.
And I think it's interesting to look at. But, you know, even in the Catholic Church, you know, we have these things. And I think that's one of the things that Pope Francis talks about all the time is, hey, the rules are not the most important thing. The human beings are the most important thing.
Right.
And it's just this idea of, you know, like here in this movie, this is obviously very extreme, but here in this movie, Colonel Nicholson is taking the rules to his grave. And he's like, I'm going to do the rules, right, as I see these things. And Spears, on the other hand, is like, I don't give a damn about your bridge. I don't give a damn about your military. I care about the people, right?
And he's willing to go along and by the end, he's fully invested in let's blow up the bridge.
Yes.
He understands that needs to happen.
Mm-hmm.
But you're right. Yeah. He's more humane about it. And what you're saying is something, in essence, I jotted it down this way, that it's about principle.
Hmm.
What happens when you give in? And that's how the movie starts out with Sato and Nicholson. But what we start to see is everybody's got these principles. How are they living up to them or not living up to them? How are they viewing them? And adhering or not adhering. And so when you were talking about Pope Francis saying it's not about the rules, it's about the people. But the point, and I think this is what he would go on and say, and maybe has, probably has, I'm just not thinking, referring to anything specific, is the rules are only there to help the people be more human.
Right.
The rules are there.
And he, sorry, go ahead.
That's exactly, and those are the points that he makes, is the rules are there to give the freedom from all this other stuff that keeps you from being human.
Right, right.
And we, within the, like G.K. Chesterton said, the fence that keeps you from rolling off the cliff, we can use the whole top of the mountain then for ourselves.
Yeah.
Right. And that's what they've missed in this movie too, is the people who are so obsessed with this stuff. They're thinking only about the rules and not about the the being fully human thing.
Exactly right. That's my opinion. And there was this nice exchange between Shears and Nicholson very early on. And Shears says, "You mean you intend to uphold the letter of the law no matter what it costs?" And Nicholson says, "Without law, Commander, there is no civilization." And Shears says, "That's just my point. Here, there is no civilization." And Nicholson says, "Then we have the opportunity to introduce it." You know what I mean? Yeah.
Oh, the British.
Just or that super mindset. Interesting. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's right. Yeah. And, you know, and I'm not saying that rules are not important. I mean, God gives us rules.
Yeah.
But it's like the Ten Commandments. They're exactly like you said. Those are good rules. It's like if you follow these, your life's going to be good. And it's not some prosperity gospel or thing that I'm saying. I'm simply saying that if you don't murder anybody, your life's going to go better than the person who does.
Well, right? It's not, it's not about feel good idea or the prosperity thing like you're saying. It's going to be hard sometimes.
Yes.
To follow those rules.
Right.
But by doing the hard thing and following those rules, like you say, your life is going to be better. And the lives of the people around you will be better.
Exactly right. Exactly right. That's what they are.
Yeah.
So, but at the same time, you don't, you know, God wants forgiveness, right? I mean, he's set up our entire sacrament, right?
Right.
Our entire, confession sacrament, to give us ways to start over. And it's like rules can deny a person a way to start over. And I think that's what Francis rails against.
Well, and it's interesting because I was talking to someone and I was talking about the examine, and which is, and I was telling this person that, well, when you at the end of the day, you take like 5 minutes, you try to think through, what did I do during the day? What happened? What do I think is the most important thing spiritually? And sometimes, it's not spiritual. It's I feel really good. I got this thing done or whatever, but whatever it is. And then you ask God, what do you think was the most important? And the person was like, oh, I need to do that.
Hmm.
And he said, and I got to the part about you need to ask God what he says. And I said, and you'll be surprised how many times things kind of slip into your mind. And you and I have talked about this before. And he said, oh, man, and that's the bummer, right? Then you see. And I was like, wow, that's your first reaction? I said, oh, no. Most of the time, it's some little nice thing that you forgot or didn't realize until it pops back into your mind. It's a little sentence here. It's a not saying something back there. It's a whatever. It's the I'm proud of you, Mom. It's kind of like you can be proud of yourself for that, or that's really a good thing, or, good for you, or this was a lovely moment. And I said, sometimes. But usually I already know those things I'm upset about. I'm already going, I'm going to try not to do this again.
Yeah.
And the person went, huh. And of course they're Protestant, so they don't automatically think of that. But any of us can do that. You don't have to just be Protestant. Because for me, the moments when I'm going, oh no, that's when I'm making my list of keep, remember this for later when you're thinking about reconciliation,
Right, right.
Yeah. So, but I was interested in that idea that the response was, oh, God's going to show me something I did that was bad.
Yes.
And I'm, because which it was against the rules. Which keeps a person
away from confession in the first place, right?
Right.
Yeah, right. That's part of the thing that I think the devil does that,
Yeah.
Wants to make you feel about that, that I am now unworthy of God's gift. And when you start to feel that way, it means that you pull away and you become distant. And sometimes it's a long road back. But that's the thing right there. Yeah. So I got a question for you. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Oh,
No,
I was just going to say, when you said that, I was thinking, oh, it'd be interesting to think about if Nicholson had lived. If he'd turned around and done that plunger because he was going to do it, and then lived, would he have changed his life? Would he have just hated himself for doing it?
Yeah.
Because of what you said. Those are the kinds of things where, because when we're on the wrong track, it's not usually because we're like, and I'm going to do something bad. You think you're doing something effective, something good. You've got the wrong point of view. And there's all kinds of factors. But Nicholson is a wonderful example of you can't see the forest for the trees.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know? Right. And that's a lot of times what it is. So yeah. Anyway, go ahead.
Absolutely. I'm sorry. No, I'm just wondering. So you just answered it in your answer there. But as I was poking around about this movie, one of the things people like to talk about is, did Nicholson, in death, the moment of death, did he fall on that on purpose, or was it an accident? Apparently, the story that I read said, in the script, it said, Nicholson falls on the plunger. And there was a big discussion between the director and Alec Guinness. Is like, do I do this on purpose? Or is it accidental? Right. And they had a long talk about it, but it ended up kind of ambiguous. But what you just said is he was going to do it, right? So
from him saying, "What have I done?"
What have
and
I
the
done?
Look on his face, I just felt like he was instantly going to turn around and do it. I didn't realize he was going to die, and then I'm like, "No, now what?" And then, but he fell in the plunger.
He fell in the plunger. Yeah.
So yeah, to me, that's he was going to do it. So. Right.
So, yeah, so it doesn't matter if it's on purpose. If he was purposefully walking towards it, which he was, then it just happened that way.
Yeah, one of the things they were saying is that Charles Laughton was tapped to play Colonel Nicholson. I don't know if you, I'm trying to think, I think we've seen Charles Laughton in something.
Yeah, I've seen Charles Laughton in something before.
Okay, you've seen him then.
Yes. Uh-huh.
So, so he is such a different style of an actor.
Yeah,
doesn't
that
mean
would have
he
been
couldn't
very different, yeah.
Well, yeah, and he was such a big guy and all this stuff. And I read that Alec Guinness said he knew that the director kind of felt like he was too repressed and so I think he wanted something bigger, Charles Laughton, kind of bigger acting style in a sense. But I was like, but to me, Alec Guinness was perfect. He was that perfect military man. Mm-hmm. He's locked down and he's got it, you know, all figured out.
Yeah, he was terrific. That was really great.
Well, he won an Oscar, so this movie won so many Oscars. Yeah,
it won a handful.
It won. Yeah. It was nominated for 8 or 9.
Wow!
And so then it won everything. So Best Picture, Best Director, Best Actor. It was the Colonel Sato actor was nominated for Best Supporting Actor. He didn't win.
Oh,
and I didn't look up who did win that year, but I was like, I feel like he should have won.
Uh huh.
But everything won. That was nominated other than
that's cool.
Yeah.
Let's see. I'm trying to look up before we close here. What else was nominated that year? I love looking that stuff
up. Oh, good idea.
Yeah.
So it would have been 1958 Oscars.
Best Picture. There we go. Yeah. Winner, The Bridge on the River Kwai. And nominees were Sayonara, Witness for the Prosecution, Peyton Place, and 12 Angry Men.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Can't believe we haven't watched that one.
Right. And then the actor category, Alec Guinness won, Marlon Brando for Sayonara, Anthony Franciosa. Okay. A Hat Full of Rain.
Mm-hmm.
And there's Charles Laughton, Witness for the Prosecution.
Witness for the Prosecution, yeah.
And Anthony Quinn, Wild as the Wind.
Never heard of it.
Yeah. Wild that wind.
But Best Supporting Actor. So it's interesting because Sesue, if I'm saying it right, Hayakawa was nominated as Colonel
Sato.
Yes,
he was. There he is. Yep.
The person who won was Red Buttons in Sayonara as Airman Joe Kelly.
Very good.
Yeah.
How fun.
So it's, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Which I've never seen Sayonara. I've never been that interested in that.
Yeah, I don't even know what it is. I don't think I've heard
romantic of it. Romantic drama about an Air Force pilot during the Korean War who falls in love with a famous Japanese actor. So,
Very good.
Yeah.
Very good.
And I think it says the woman in it won Best Supporting Actress. So she was the first
Miyoshi
East Asia-born woman.
Yeah, very good.
Anyway.
Cool. Well, that's fun.
Yeah.
Well, this was sure fun to talk about, and there still is a lot we could talk about.
Oh, my gosh.
But yeah, this is a powerful movie.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it hits me pretty deep, and it makes me think about stuff, a lot of which I've shared, you know. So some of it is, like, ineffable. I can't quite touch it, you know. Mm-hmm. But it's very good. I like it.
It's the kind of thing that I imagine if you watched it once a year or so.
Mm-hmm.
Some of those deeper things would become more obvious because you've already kind of covered the other stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, I've got movies like that where I don't probably watch them once a year, but I've watched them enough times. And also because I've talked about them in movie groups or with you. And so I've covered the big things.
Mm.
And then you watch and you start to see all the little things that support the big things.
Oh, I like that. Yeah.
Or the other themes and the other characters are used in ways that you didn't expect because you're free to watch them instead of just looking at the big picture. So, if you have a movie like that, like this one, you know, just every so often, if it occurs to you, then watch it.
Hmm.
Then go read an Alistair MacLean novel and watch
it
again.
Which I am so very going to do.
Oh my gosh, I can't believe I forgot about it, man. Oh, too good.
Too good.
His novels are so good. Force and there's somebody else named, I think, Alistair Bagley, who wrote very similar type novels that I like too.
Him I don't know. I'm not familiar with
him. Yeah, I'm going to look for him now. Yeah,
very good. Well, I love it. Well, thanks for watching this one.
I'm glad you picked it. I couldn't believe I'd never seen it, just in clips, you know?
Yeah.
So that's perfect. Good.
Very cool. All right. Next up for us is a book called Christy by Catherine Marshall.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm well on my way in it.
Oh, good.
So, yeah.
It's very different than I think the kind of thing that we usually do read, but there's something about it. Somebody I was talking to about it said it's so wholesome.
Hmm.
And I was like, and wholesome was used in kind of the mocking sense. And I was like, I know it's wholesome, but I still like it. And then later I was like, why is it bad for me to like a book that's wholesome? Because that means, I guess, it's simple and sweet and all that stuff. And I'm like, but it's just really good. I really love it. So
that's good. Good.
Fingers
well, I'm enjoying
crossed
it so
like
far.
It too.
You bet.
Okay, good.
You bet.
Good.
Well, good. Yep. Sounds great.
Okay. All right.
All right. Well, thanks for listening, everyone.
Yes, yes. And we'll talk to you again soon.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thank you.